This week on RSVB Update, The Wilderness is Reborn with new Slayer rewards, a graphical rework, and the addition of opt-in PvP. We run through rewards, what a wilderness skilling D&D would look like, and the practicality of the graphical rework. This is RSVB Update, episode 894, recorded Thursday, August 4th, 2022, Reborn to be Wild. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. It is August, and we have the monthly RuneScape headliner here, and I have to regretfully report that Tanis is still under the weather, so he's not here this week, but joining me to fill in the panel, man the bridge, so to speak, we got Sirion. Welcome aboard.
Hello.
This is your first regular show of the year. You've been very active on the monthly bit scene this year, but this is your first regular show of the year.
Yeah, not the circumstances that I was hoping for to get on, of course, but nevertheless, good to be back in the saddle on these as well.
And also joining us to talk about the wilderness, and since it's a heavy Slayer update, we have Parnassius on board, and I figured, you know, let's have you on, because I remember when the Slayer Collection log came out, and 120 Slayer, you were big advocates for Slayer around that, so welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, still big advocate of Slayer. Unfortunately, I am 200 mil in it, but I still get out there and do tasks, you know, a couple of times a week, and this update is just really exciting to me, so looking forward to being on the show and chatting about it.
Wonderful. And for anybody wondering about when we're going to talk about Daughter of Chaos, we'll be handling Daughter of Chaos next week with the usual RSVNB Update Quest Week treatment surrounding that quest. We'll talk about the mechanics in that quest, lore ramifications, and just in general how that quest made us feel and how we feel about the start of RuneScape's first new storyline, since I feel like it's been since 2019 when we really started to pick up on the Desperate Times, Desperate Measures bandwagon. But nonetheless, if you want full show notes, you can find those at update.show. You can also find us in game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. I am at Shane12088. Sirion, boy, I was on autopilot there. Hello, Tanis, if you're listening. Sirion is Sirion, and
yes,
Parnassius can be found at Parnassius. You could tell that the usual show open kind of just flowed there, but I know very much who you both are, just so we're aware of that.
You better.
All right, so Wilderness Reborn, and we were actually a little bit shocked about this update when it landed, because we got the news post last Friday, and we were thinking in production of last week's episode, we were thinking, you know, we're going to do the fan content policy last week, which, by the way, go check out the nibbles of. Still lots of interesting questions about that. But we were thinking, we knew we were getting a quest in August, Daughter of Chaos, right? But we didn't know that the Wilderness rework would launch on the same week as the quest. And I'm trying to go back in my memory to think of when they launched such a big update like this combined with a quest. And I have to go back very far for that. And that's why I want to focus primarily on the Wilderness this week.
I think also because being that a lot of the quest was set in the Wilderness, you know, with the big rework there,
it kind of had to.
It had to sort of go hand in hand. So I think that was sort of the main reason for it.
Yeah, and what were I know? Obviously, we had the what do they call those? My mind says roundtable, but roadmap. We had Mod Keeper's roadmap, right? And we saw Wilderness rework. And before we get too far into what we actually got, what would just be your quick 2-sentence pitch of what a Wilderness rework would have been if you were thinking about it before you knew what we were getting, Sirion, just as an example?
Um, reevaluation. Yeah, that's not the right word, but like a reimagination of the wilderness as a dangerous continent that has relevant content based around a risk reward mechanic.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And for anybody wondering, you remember we had our Menaphos expansion in 2017, right? Expansion 2 was supposed to be Invention, which we got in September of that year. Invention Batch 2, rather. But also a wilderness rework. I don't know if it would have been the same scope of what we got, but the question of a wilderness rework has been on the table for years, and I think it's finally arrived, and it's a reimagining of what wilderness is, I think.
Yeah, they did want to do a wildy rework, but very much around restoring the former glory of Foreign Free.
Yeah.
So I think if we had gotten this earlier, I think it would have taken a very different form. I think there would have been a city in the wilderness. I think, you know, a lot of what we now see as the Infernal Source and, you know, the Sentistan Undercity and all that stuff, maybe even a lot of Sentistan stuff itself would all have been moved to that location, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get back to that later, but I think the sad thing about this update is that while it makes the wilderness more relevant again, at the same time, it doesn't really add new reasons to go there.
Yeah, it kind of just iterates, I think is a good word.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of disagree with that. My original thought when they said wilderness rework, I would have thought sort of more reclaiming land and such, and, you know, sort of fighting out there, and, you know, maybe as we go along, you know, developing a small city that we have to protect and things. But I mean, I have spent very little time in the wilderness. My wilderness was basically get the wilderness task done, never go back. I'll go there once a day to do my farming patch, and that was about it. The way they've redesigned it, and with all the new Slayer creatures, I mean, having all the Abyssal Lords and Beasts out there now, the new demons and things, I think it's going to drag a lot more people out there, especially those on Slayer tasks and, you know, getting those drops and things. I think Mandrith will be the Slayer master that people will go for now rather than Lanarkaya, because there are those rewards.
I mean,
such.
Maybe. And we'll get into why that might be. I'm not 100% sold on that idea myself. But
even so, you know, at that respect, it's much more of a skilling area then. And if you think maybe the right parallel here would be Anachronia, right? Where that's also a skilling arena in many ways, but, you know, it has its own content, it has its own lore, it has, you know, it has a sort of base of operations that you can use. It's much more substantial, and I was kind of hoping that the wilderness would become more like that.
Yes.
Not necessarily as big, you know, but that this update would be a foundation for new content to be added to the wilderness. And
agree with that. Yeah.
Instead, we got, you know, a whole bunch of extra enemies being added and all that stuff. But even that, you know, the flavor lacks. Like, they say these are the remains of the Zamorakian forces, but it's not laid out as like a battlefield, right? Like a Khazar battlefield south of Adoin. That's, you know, that's a battlefield. And that fluff, that's missing from the wilderness.
Right.
It's still a desolate wasteland.
It's just a rework of what it was, and they've taken PvP out of it.
Yes. You're entirely right on that, in that it's not what a reimagined wilderness would look like if they were rebuilding and launching it from scratch. It's just revamping what was already there with different emphasis on that. And obviously we'll talk about the PvP angle of that in just a wee bit, but I want to actually start with Slayer because we alluded to Mandrith being a key point to this wilderness rework and Mandrith Slayer tasks in particular. And one of the interesting things that people might not be aware of is that with this update, Mandrith was actually moved to level 54 wilderness up by the mage arena there. And obviously you can now teleport in with a Slayer cape, so that's going to be, of course, the best way to access him. But just a couple of caveats with Mandrith, and these are very important caveats to know before you go in. Mandrith ignores your block and prefer lists and goes from a list of tasks that are purely in the wilderness. In particular, you've got things like all the abyssal creatures, the beasts, demons, lords, and savages. Obviously, the demons are your conventional slayer ones. You got your semi-boss slayer monsters in terms of mammoths, wyverns, and rippers. You also have traditional black demons, dark beasts, gargoyles, glacers, greater demons, greater demon berserkers, etc. You got Onyx and Hydrix dragons of all things. You got revenants and soul gazers and seekers, of course. So if this sounds like the Slayer task of list of what you want to kill, then Mandrith is probably one of the Slayer creatures you're going to want to use. But it's important to note that if you get a task from Mandrith, you have to complete it within the wilderness. Otherwise, it will not tick down that number.
And another place for soul gazers as well, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
What one thing people do need to remember as well is that every creature out there is aggressive, so don't hang around the dragons too long if you don't have your dragon fire potions.
Yeah.
Don't stop and have a look and then say, oh, I'm down to 100 health points.
Yeah. And I mean, that's wonderful because you don't need to run that aggro pot then.
Exactly.
And there is, and speaking of that, I also did an Abyssal Demons task there, and perfect place to do that now without having PvPers running around, in that you don't need to worry about the aggro pot. You can just go in, equip your traditional Abyssal Demon AoE Scythe set up, and away you go, right in the wilderness. I'd say it's a little bit south of the herb patch for anyone wondering where it is, but if I had an abyssal demon task, I would probably do it in the wilderness now. Just saying, even if it was from Mandrith or not. So I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much any task I get that's on this list will be done in the wilderness now.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk anything about Mandrith tasks in particular? Should we move on to more of the actual mechanics that you'll face while doing Slayer?
No, I don't think. I mean, it's basically the same as every other one. I mean, you go there, you get your task. I don't think there's anything special about it other than that you just fight them in the wilderness.
Can you force tasks using the Slayer masks?
That is one thing I want to check out. I should have actually taken my worm mask down there to see if I could get it.
I can actually test that for you. I'll test that for you right while we're here, because the task is done. I also did a Dark Beast task, which was rather amusing in terms of what happened there. And I think at this point we can talk about the threat mechanics, the ambushes, and the Wilderness Volcano. And I'm specifically going to start with the ambush on this as one of the mechanics. And I don't know whether it's after a set amount of creatures or if it's at a specific threat level, but if you're not careful, you can get blapped pretty hard, in particular, because when I was doing my Dark Beasts, I was greeted by two Acheron Mammoths, one Onyx Dragon, and a bunch of Revenants.
Rip.
Yeah. And obviously not having, because I was doing Dark Beasts at the time, and I didn't have Anti-Fire with me, so obviously I met my end with that. So
yeah, it sounds like an interesting trade-off that, you know, normally you know the environment you're going to be in, you know the enemies you're going to be fighting, and in the wilderness that's all sort of, you need to be prepared for much more.
Yeah.
And that adds, you know, a level of threat.
It gives an actual real use for your elder selves and things where, I mean, I just make elder selves and use them everywhere, but I mean, that's got everything in it. I'll use them when I'm doing, you know, any creature, but you've basically got a dragonfire potion in there that technically is wasted because you're not fighting those.
Yeah.
But when they can just appear now, it really gives an actual good foundation use for having those potions.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the ambush, as long as you kill one of the creatures, like say if I had killed the Onyx Dragon, that would make that ambush disappear and you don't get any drops or any loot from the ambush creature that you kill. You just simply kill it and then they disappear and you're free to carry on.
Keep going. Business. Yep.
Yep. And I can confirm that things like the Helm of Warping do work for forcing tasks with Mandrith.
Excellent. Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So I
that
just
is very good.
Yeah. I just forced a task of 295 abyssal demons.
Well, enjoy that.
Yeah. The question will be, do I do it with abyssal demons or do it with lords or beasts or savages or something?
And that's you can jump between them too. You know, you don't have to do them at the one. You can sort of do some lords and then drop down to the beasts and things like that. So
yeah. So ambushes are just something to keep you on your toes, and we're not entirely sure about when they spawn. Mine was after 100 dark beasts. It could be at specific threat levels. So just always be on your toes with that, I guess.
Yeah, I think the idea is that it can always happen.
Speak of the devil, a dark beast just appeared.
Yeah, what's your threat level?
Zip. Zero.
Yeah. See, so it can sort of always.
So it's
happen.
Random. Yeah.
But like the higher the threat level, the bigger the ambush, and the more common they're going to be.
Yeah.
And the same for the volcano stuff. Like the longer you're in the wilderness, the more likely that the homing lava knows where you are and comes after you.
Yeah, and the interesting part about that is that lava scales up in damage. And when I was, I think, threat 7 or 8, it hit me for upwards of 4,500 life points when I didn't pray against it.
Yeah.
So
The threat level, if you're just running around, will not rise as fast as you actively scaling there.
Yeah,
at least
that's
what
right.
I'm reading here.
Yeah.
So.
And and you can pray against it based on what it says in your chat box, talking about the lava or what color it is, actually. It's got different colors based on what it's going to be. And, you know, one of the things I think this is really going to revolutionize when it comes to Slayer is that you now have a choice about whether or not you want your typical, you know, comfy block preferred Lanikea task list, maybe focusing on things like Chaos Giants and Lost Grove creatures, Abyssals and such, which I still haven't been able to put together a good block and prefer list for Lanikea. Or you can just say, hey, I want everything, send me into the wilderness. And we're going to just deal with whatever is assigned, even if it's going to be Ripper Demons, which, you know, would be a good opportunity to learn them and make some binding contract pouches. So.
Also, Mandrith does have a Slayer challenge too, like the other Slayer people.
Oh, that's good.
But I haven't
had that come up yet. So it looks
I was just reading down a bit lower, and I was just checking. I thought, I wonder if they do have a challenge, and it does. You need 94 Slayer, obviously, because you need to fight Lava Strike Worms, but it's 15 of each of the following of Abyssal Demon, Black Demon, Blue Dragons, Fire Giants, Gargoyles, Greater Demons, Green Dragons, Hellhounds, Ice Strike Worms, Calgarian Demons, Lava Strike Worms, Revenants, and Water Fiends.
That's not
and
too bad.
And then you'll get, 15 of each, and then you will get additional rewards if you kill all four of the bosses of Chaos Elemental, Corp Beast, King Black Dragon, and Wieldy Worm. And obviously Death Touch darts will not count if you use those.
Apparently that's 21,500 Slayer XP. And then an additional 8,500 for the bosses. Question, I guess, would be how quick can you get that done? So,
15 of each, you could go through that pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Anything else on threat mechanics? I don't think we also mentioned that as your threat level goes up, you deal and take more damage in the wilderness.
Yes. So. But that can be sort of helped a bit by one of the rewards that are we going to talk about that at the moment?
The Infernal Puzzle Box reward from Daughter of Chaos.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things is that the threat level immediately resets if you leave the wilderness, understand correctly.
Yeah.
When I was experimenting, I found that like there's fun ways to leave the wilderness momentarily. For example, if you're doing the agility, you can get teleported to the pit and then you come back and suddenly threat gone. So that was kind of funny. So I wonder if they're gonna change or fix that.
I wonder if going into the KBD lair counts.
Yeah, good question.
Because that's something
The mage training arena will probably reset your
threat. Yeah, I have tested that one. That does reset it because that's a non-wilderness.
If you go down into that little,
I wonder about the Summer's End quest series as well.
Oh yeah, probably.
If you have the ring and jump in one of those portals,
Yeah, exactly.
It's also worth noting, while we're talking about the things that happen in the wilderness, specifically from the volcano, you can actually scale to the top of the volcano. I haven't figured out why you're able to do that yet, but it's something that you can do.
I think it's a hint to the new skill that they're going to add.
Oh, God.
Lava swimming. Oh, sorry, lava sailing. Sorry,
lava sailing, yeah.
Of course you would say that. You're funny.
Oh, right, thank you. I try very hard.
I mean, you're saying, I think it's going to be a hint. And then it's like, okay, well, it's a hint to what update? To what update? But oh no, it's going to be something called lava swimming, sure, or lava sailing.
Yeah.
All right. But one of the big reasons you ought to do Mandrith Slayer tasks, in addition to just experiencing the new wilderness, and one of the things we haven't talked about yet, is that when you complete your Mandrith Slayer task, the amount of Slayer points that you get is influenced by your wilderness threat level, believe it or not. So the way it works is that completing wilderness tasks awards 15 points plus your threat level. Every 10th task, you'll get 15 points plus your threat level times 5. And then at your 50th task, you'll get the same 15 points plus your threat level times 10. And with that, as you can see, that's going to be a massive amount of Slayer points for completing wilderness Slayer tasks. Also, you get Reaper points whenever you complete a Slayer task in the wilderness without dying. Killing outside the wilderness or skipping a task will award 1 Reaper point. So you can get a wilderness Slayer task from reading this, skip it, and get a Reaper point. A singular 1 Reaper point. I found that that's an interesting thing on the news post, that you still get the Reaper point if you skip the task. Or the way it looks here is that you complete the Slayer tasks outside the wilderness and you get the Reaper point as well. But with that, it doesn't... I remember us talking that Mandrith tasks don't tick down outside the wilderness. So
no.
That's an interesting dynamic.
Weird.
Based on what the news post says. In any case, if you complete the wilderness task without dying, you will be awarded a Reaper point. So... I just wanted to point that out, and obviously it's not going to be as huge as doing any of the regular PVM daily Reaper tasks, because those award anywhere from something like 12 all the way up to 26, I think, if I remember the scaling correctly on those. So this isn't going to be the new method of Reaper points. So let's just dispel with that notion right now.
No, they're just little. That's a little bonus.
All right, but the most interesting thing. You complete a Wilderness Slayer task from Mandrith, and you're awarded with a Wilderness Slayer chest, which has a really interesting drop table, including items that were previously only available from the Bounty Hunter game mode, including the Tier 87 weapons like Annihilation and Decimation, which sell for quite a bit, and I think Decimation is the one that has an interesting special attack that people use from time to time. I think that's the one. But those are on that list. Also on that list is the first source of Necronium salvages in the game. A huge spiky Necronium salvage, Alks, for 400k. Also we have Soul Reaper refreshes and Death Touch darts.
And honestly, I have a little bit of a question here. And this is more of a philosophical question, perhaps. Is why is there a need to add these items to this chest? Like, obviously, this chest already has a source of, you know, unique drops like the Death Touch dart and the Wilderness items. And sure, there will be rare drops, and the Necronium can fill in that. The more uncommon range, I guess, of drops.
Rather than dropping GP, drop something after Elk or yep.
But why something? Why bump it up yet another tier? Why include Necronium? Because we are running out of salvage metals very quickly at this.
Yeah, because then you just got Bane and the Animicus left.
It feels to me that the Wilderness update is not substantial enough to really warrant this step up. Like, sure, it's a big deal, but let's also not pretend that this is, you know, it doesn't feel like this is necessarily the highest tier Slayer content in the game right now. Is it? Like, we have so much stuff that is limited already to, you know, 110 plus Slayer. The Wilderness feels more, you know, horizontal in a sense, and then we're adding, you know, the highest tier of salvage as loot to it.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, most everything in this Wilderness Mandrith task list is 95 plus Slayer. You have the Abyssal Demons at 85, you have the Strike Worms at 93 and 94, but everything else is 95 plus. And that's really only the Abyssal Beasts and the dragons. Everything else does not have a Slayer level. Well, Dark Beast does.
Sure, yeah, exactly. So, sure, it is pretty high level content.
Yeah.
Like, I won't admit that. But at the same time, let's not pretend that at this point level 95 Slayer is the highest tier there is, because it goes all the way up to 120. Right.
And
there's content now.
Yeah. Arakelcom, just adding Arakelcom to this drop table would have probably been more than enough.
Exactly, like, there's higher level content out there for Slayer specifically that's now going to give worse drops than the Wildy.
Isn't that what they wanted, though? They wanted this to be the most lucrative source of Slayer XP and profit?
Yeah, sure, but it already is the most lucrative source of Slayer XP, right?
Right,
you already do more damage.
Yeah. Okay, fair.
You already do more damage if your threat level is high, so you're going to kill faster. I guess all these monsters still drop their normal loot. So, you know, why are we making something that is already best in the game even better? And I'm fine that the Wilderness Slayer chest, you know, exists, but let's not pretend that every single monster needs to cause there to be a drop in that chest, because it's going to have its own drop. This is just for your little extras.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's one or two of these salvages.
Oh, sure. I'm not going to say it's massive, but, you know, why not take a lower tier that will just do the trick, so that when we have like a new big boss coming out in a few months, we can add Necronium salvage and make that be a big deal for that boss.
Right.
Mm. Agreed. Yeah, Arakelcom would have been more than enough here. I know that they don't like to drop straight gold anymore. They want things that you sort of have to elk or sell. But no, I I didn't see much sense in adding Necronium to this level.
Right, and but let's just also take a look at this chest. Aside from the big ticket items of the wilderness weapons, what on here is a this is a wonderful item. I'm happy that I got it. The Trail Begone items, the volcanic protection, are nice to have, but they're not something you're gonna jump up and down about. Soul Reaper refreshes, right, also, Death Touch darts.
Like the threat level items, you want to not use them, right? If you're doing Slayer.
Exactly.
So if you are doing Slayer, you want to have a high threat level because then you get more points and more XP, but you're going to get items that reduce your threat level. And
maybe
who is going to need
skilling
who is
out
gonna,
there?
Yeah, if you're skilling out there. So now we have Slayers, Slayer people selling their loot to skillers. That's the wrong way around, right? Mm. Like, isn't it so that skillers make, like, farmy stuff and green stuff and potions? That's the word I was
looking
for. Potions and food and armor and all that stuff for combatters to use, because combat, you know, is more of a closed ecosystem. And now we're starting to... the more I think about it, this Slayer chest makes no sense whatsoever.
I think they just wanted a little cherry on the top, honestly.
Yeah, but like, if you think about the impacts, you know, if you think about this in the wider context, you know, maybe I'm missing something. I will happily admit that, because contrary to popularly believe, I'm not actually a J-mod, and I don't actually know what the reasoning is for all this. But
contrary to popular belief.
It seems that if somebody had seriously thought about what should be dropped here and how do you want the wider ecosystem to work with items being sold and bought by different categories of players, this thing doesn't really hold up to scrutiny.
I mean, I like things like the Soul Reaper refresh and the Death Touch dart, because it brings in something that's sort of a treasure hunter item that you can actually earn in game now. But yeah, I sort of see what you mean on the on those other items.
Yeah, I guess at least the Soul Reaper refresh makes a lot of sense, because if you're out there killing monsters, you're pretty likely to be killing other monsters, right? I mean, I'm of two minds of this.
Like, it's interesting, but at the same point, it's a cherry on top, and you have your question of why.
No, but like the things like the darts, right? Like, the darts first came into the game as part of the sweepstake, wasn't it, in-game?
Yes.
Where you could get, like, all three checks and get them. Like, they were a huge deal right now. Back then, right now they're not. And, you know, they were still being handed out as part of, you know, Twitch Prime packages, all that stuff. And then the merchant came, and now they're just drops. And I don't know, it makes me kind of sad that, you know, things like double XP, but also Death Touch darts apparently are becoming such a normal thing to have, and normal thing to have as drops. And how are you ever going to top that with new exciting items without making them super, super powerful? Like, before we know it, we'll get, you know...
But you're forgetting that you have tier 87 weapons on this list.
That's what I like, that the weapons are brilliant.
I mean, you don't hear me having a problem with that.
Yeah.
Right? Because at least that's sort of part of the ecosystem, game ecosystem already. But we're taking, like, I've always sort of seen the treasure hunter and MTX items and all those promotions as almost sort of a separate category of items, right? They're untradeable, they're yours, they are special bonuses for your account. It's a bit like knowledge bombs and XP boosts. It's like, that all belongs to a category of items that's like buffs.
Yeah, but I mean, again, things like Soul, I mean, the Death Touch darts maybe, but things like Soul Reaper Refresh, where you can get an extra task, it'd be great to earn something like that and not have to sit there and go, oh, okay, that's on Treasure Hunter, so I've got to spend, you know, $5 and buy some keys or whatever keys cost you, and do it that way. I can actually go do my tasks out there and have a chance of getting a Soul Reaper Refresh.
Yeah, I mean, the Soul Reaper Refresh is the one I have the least problem with as well.
Yeah,
like that's
yeah,
fine.
That's a good
like,
one.
That's on in line with the activity refresh tokens you can get.
Yeah, but as you said, yeah, Death Touch. I mean, I like earning the Death Touch. I mean, I've got 70 in my bank. I'm waiting until I get 100, and I'm just gonna go camp. I think it's
Ambassador.
The Ambassador, yeah. I'm just going to go and camp him and see how I go. But then again, that's giving me a chance at some of the best drops in game for really no risk. So I sort of see what you mean there with bringing these into game and making them common. Does it devalue other things? Fair point.
Yeah, and you know,
it's a hard topic, and there might not be one right answer. But to me, I mean, I feel Death Touch darts have now, as of this update,
they've lost their wow factor.
They have lost that, you know, special aura they had around them because they were special. You had gotten them from a certain promotion, and that's now. Like next thing, they're tradable on the GE, right?
I don't think they'll go that far.
Never. No, I hope they'd never do that.
But, and, you know, I think the interesting question to ask at the end of the day about this is that if it's not the task list, if it's not the extra Slayer points, is it this wilderness reward chest that might encourage somebody to do a Slayer task in the wilderness? I think that's an interesting question we can ask the community on that. Because that might be the deal breaker, the deal maker for some people. So...
Well, I mean, chance for those weapons, you know, on a Slayer task, I think, you know, is a good reason to be going out there and doing that. I might get one of those good weapons. I mean, you know, they're 80 mil plus each. You know, 80 mil on a Slayer task is not bad.
Yeah, and let's just caveat, that's a GE price. We'll have to see if they actually sell for that, but...
Yeah, I mean, they still do at the moment, but... you know, will this bring more into the game and cause them to start crashing a bit? That'll be an interesting thing.
Yeah. I want to actually touch on one final thing here in relation to killing things in the wilderness, something that's important for the general PVM ecosystem in the game. And you guys, I, of course, being the resident PVMer on this panel, have to go there. If you complete the gross misconduct achievement and you kill 144 demons in the wilderness, that is a comp cape requirement, but after doing Daughter of Chaos, it also unlocks tier 3 of the Infernal Puzzle Box, which, for anybody wondering, tier 3 of the Infernal Puzzle Box makes it so that if you are holding the Infernal Puzzle Box, your adrenaline will not drain outside of combat, making this now an alternative for the adrenaline urn. And, gosh, I'm blanking on the relic power. Persistent rage.
Persistent rage.
Persistent rage. So, in theory, with this, you could go back to your adrenaline urn, or you could just go to this if you didn't want to bother with an adrenaline urn, and now you could run a full suite of damage-based relic powers if you wanted to with this, if you don't mind giving up an inventory spot for this. And of course, as we know with what happened with the Pontifex Ring throughout all of the Centistan quests and the Elder God Wars, I'd say there's probably a fairly good chance at the end of this story arc that benefits
that's
of the Infernal
confirmed
Puzzle Box.
Mojack has confirmed that.
Ooh, okay. All right. So
yeah, and I find it... I'm going to give my take, but keep in mind I'm not a PVMer, but I find it kind of hilarious that everybody is so up in arms about it. Like, I saw a whole bunch of people in our clan, at least, that were talking about how crazy OP this is and make half the content of the game, you know, irrelevant. I'm like, let's be honest. it's a quality of life thing.
Exactly. Right? Just like vigor.
It's, you can already sort of keep your adrenaline up by, you know, you surging and freedoming and, you know, you doing all kinds of adrenaline stalling techniques. It's just, most people don't bother in most cases. This just gets rid of that need. Meh.
Yeah, and when you look at this now, there's four different ways of doing it. There's the legacy way, which you mentioned, of stalling with abilities. There is the adrenaline urn, which you have to keep topped up, which can be filled with the adrenaline crystals at PVM Hub. There is also persistent rage if you want to use a relic slot, and now there will be this wilderness refresh power of the Infernal Puzzle Box.
Just frees up one of those relic spots for something else now.
And what you're seeing throughout all of this is a spectrum of choice. You're free to choose any which of those methods if you're unable to unlock any of the other ones. And let's be honest, the adrenaline urn was a Halloween event. The persistent rage is a relatively high-powered archaeology relic. So this one is killing Zamorak once in story mode, completing Daughter of Chaos, and killing 144 demons in the wilderness, which really isn't that bad in terms of providing
PVMers unlock. Who don't want to sit there and go and get that high-level archaeology.
Yeah, so, I mean, people were already doing this. Let's just be real here and accept that this is just another choice that's going to be out there, and it's really not going to change the way PVM goes, except for making it easier to get into for people, I feel, because people on the higher end, let's be honest, we're already doing this in one way or another.
Yep.
Through
exactly.
The urn or stalling or persistent rage. So I don't particularly see what the problem would have been with this. But was it? Were
I
people saying it as a problem, Sirion, or was it just saying, oh god, too overpowered?
I think they were seeing it as the wider trend where the game is making the game. Where they're seeing too many overpowered things coming out, and the power creep being too extreme. So I don't know.
Gatekeeper syndrome.
Yeah, that's a good chance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's. That's all I'll say.
It's,
on that.
And these same people will keep playing, so I don't know.
Exactly, exactly. So, before we move on to other skilling methods in the wilderness, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because without you guys, we wouldn't be doing all the fun little extracurricular things we do here at Update. So this week in particular, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arbitz L., Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Diana, Dominic F., Drama Free, Duramax, Elomady, Flawsaman, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Lucky Ducky, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Patty the Architect, Parnassius, hello, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Seth W., Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, and Tom V. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and you let us do all sorts of fun things here in addition to the main podcast. And, of course, what we're talking about is things like our monthly bit, which we just recorded yesterday, talking about achievements in 2022. We had the boss tier
really fun one.
List last month. We talked about Legacy Combat a few months earlier with David, blew Tannis's mind on that one. Speaking of that, actually, I did my, and I didn't mention this to you guys up front, I did my Dark Beast task in Legacy Combat.
Oh!
In the wilderness.
Yeah, I mean, I Legacy Combat in, I mean, if you want Legacy Combat gameplay, old school RS, I don't think.
In any case.
If you fight Revenants, Legacy is the best way to do it. It just seems so silly to me.
In any case, if you want to learn why that was the case, or you want to hear the boss tier list, or you want to hear us talk about achievements, you can check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. We also have a VIP tier where you get a special rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month. And if you want to give the ultimate gift for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. in terms of everything else that you get. And we're working on incorporating a few extra monthly Patreon bits and bobs. And these are going to be things that are relatively unannounced in the sense that they're not going to become regular features, just that if something comes up where we need to do something, or we want to have a discussion about something, or we want to show something off, that might quantify as a Patreon extra. And one of the things that is happening with that very soon is the bank roast, where we were doing a technology test at the start of July for the video stuff, and I was showing Earth and Thaxi screen share, and they were absolutely floored at the organization of my bank. So the idea behind this was that, oh, we should just go through your bank and see what the hell's up with it. So that's going to be coming to a Patreon feed near you as well soon. So you're going to be able to see what is in my bank and what kind of problems they see with it. So if that sounds interesting to you, or you want to watch that, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much.
No one wants to see my bank. It is a mess.
Well, yeah, and see everywhere. See the rhythm behind mine. They feel is that it's just weird how it's organized. But mine, on the other hand, feels all right to me because there's this nifty little thing called the search feature.
Yep, that's what I use. Where'd that one go? I'll just search it. It's easier to.
But once again, thanks everybody for making what we do here possible and allowing us to do more than just the week-to-week podcast. So,
and if I can, I am a Patreon, just to give a shout out to some of those little videos that you do. Things like, I found a really interesting one I think you sent out last week was about the fan content policy, the coverage of that. I can't remember who it was you had talking
Chaos
about
Elemental.
It. Kellis, okay, yep. She was brilliant, just explaining it all and the issues and problems with it.
Yeah.
So really good, yeah. Really good stuff.
Yeah, I actually want to give a highlight to that episode because it's on the surface, it's something that seems really dry, but at the core of it, when it comes to content creation and in particular the artists and writers, it's an important issue to talk about, and I'm glad we had the chance to do that. So
yeah. No, so I listened to that one and thought, wow, you know, that was, as you said, one you were sort of thinking, oh, it's going to be a bit dry, but she got right into it. And some of the points and such that were made were really interesting and sort of, you know, opened your eyes to a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about skilling in the wilderness. Sirion, what were your first thoughts today?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get a feel for the new wilderness, so I went in happy and tried to do some divination. And I immediately got a very scary pop-up that said, as soon as you click OK, you're going to be opted into PvP. So apparently you doing like the cursed energy divination.
That is still PvP opt-in.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Which, I don't know, I find this...
As is warbands.
Odd. Yeah, now warbands I can get behind a little bit.
Because that was always a PvP activity.
Exactly, and that always felt very, you know, PvP focused. But cursed energy, I don't know. They have this whole update about we want to get rid of, you know, this danger in the wilderness from PvP when you're doing skilling there. And then, you know, they only go halfway there.
That's to combat the bots that are out there, though.
Yeah,
when they first had that, it was very bot heavy out there. That's why they lowered to what you had to be able to be killed out there from what it was initially, because level threes are out there, and yeah, there's a lot of energy coming in from, you know, XYZ 1-2-3 and then XYZ 1-2-4 and XYZ. You know, it's just the same thing as over and over again.
Sure, but like I think we can all agree that the solution to having a botting problem is not let's just make that activity let's bot it a lot. Let's make the players play their own police and kill these bots. I mean, I mean, you can't do that.
No, I
totally agree, and I think yeah, that threat level on those bots is the perfect way to go. The issue is where it lies in that sort of level 25 area. I think the wilderness, if they made it a level 35 area, just in that volcano, where there's not going to be a quick teleport away for the bots. That might be a better solution. So yeah, that also, the threat level comes in and they get ambushed.
And also, you don't have to completely remove that method, right? But if you can make it very uneconomical for these bots to do that, then it will also disappear automatically. So, in a sense, make the threat level increase really fast when you do cursed energy and get these bots ambushed all the time.
Yep.
That's all fine. I honestly, I don't know. I find it to be halfway there. If it's really such a problem, cursed divination stuff, then just remove it from the game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or make it untradeable. Make cursed energy untradeable. So what's the point in, you go there to collect it for yourself. Because... curse energy itself is not used for anything. You use it to make any of the other level ones. So, but you get it, I think it's 150% rather than 100%. Make it an untradeable item, and that'll stop the botting out there.
Exactly. I think there's all the solutions there, and I wish they would have been more consistent.
Yeah.
I think the Abyss right now still requires sculling, but that's going to be patched out.
Yeah, that was a fun message from Mod Jack, actually. And this was a surprise. There was a question about the Abyss, and to use the Abyss right now, you need to turn PvP on. And we should be clear, we haven't talked about PvP yet at all, and we will, but there's a person you talk to right near the border at the river by the wilderness wall, and you can turn PvP on there, and that's how you use the Abyss right now. But Mod Jack said, I didn't realize that you now have to toggle PvP before entering wilderness to access the Abyss. In dev, it worked as before, sculling you when you enter. So he's approaching that, but he's taking it one step further, in that he said, I've asked for this to be changed to remove the skull requirement from the Abyss entirely and not auto-skull you as it used to. I doubt a change like this will qualify for hotfixing, so it'll probably be coming the next week or so. Which, when we look at that, that's a big deal, because what that means is that you could now use the Abyss for runecrafting without the demonic skull, which, let's be honest, is a wonderful moneymaker for blood runes or water runes at this time.
Mm-hmm.
To access that without having that PvP risk. You can, of course, still have the risk of something spawning low-level wilderness, but the Abyss is going to be an interesting moneymaker once that comes in for people who don't want a PvP.
But don't you have to have the demonic skull to get the extra XP and such down there?
You just...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's the extra XP that you get, but if you're not caring about XP and you just want the money, the Abyss is the best way to do that.
Yeah, what does the Abyss give you over just going there direct? I've never done Abyss, sorry.
It's just faster. It's the fastest way to access any altar.
Because you can...
If I've got a ton of the Wicked Hood teleports, though, that's still the best way.
Yeah, that's still the best way.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Right.
Yeah. No, I thought maybe it gave you extra runes or something.
but from what I understand, and I forgot the name of this item, I think it's a ring of...
Ferinthry? Bracelet of Ferinthry?
Yes, that one. That already bypasses part of the sculling, right? Let's see.
Yep.
This is an interesting topic because what we're effectively sitting on the border of, and it goes to kind of back to what you said with your Anachronia comment, is that we're right at the cusp of making the wilderness a really interesting a skilling area.
Yes.
And it's funny that they're looking at removing skulling from this, where, again, you're going to have a lot of bots for runecraft running, but do nothing about cursed energy.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you can kind of already bypass the skilling requirement with the foreign tree bracelet. So I understand. This is one. This is the same as what we were talking about, the adrenaline drain, right? Where they just remove that. It's just a quality of life point at this point. Like, everybody can just get rid of the skilling requirement, so...
I think that's a win-win.
Exactly. Everybody gets better from it. Let's just not complain about it. And a demonic school, that will still require you to be skulled. So I think we get the best of both worlds that way.
Yeah, in terms of XP, and then you can also apply that to agility or any of the other skilling methods or slayer methods you might want to do in the wild.
Yeah,
I just saw people commenting the other day that, you know, monsters need to drop more runes because runes are getting so much more expensive.
No, the whole
look
idea,
at it. This is the perfect solution, right? Like, exactly. If this makes more people do rune crafting, you know, it's more money to skillers. It's better prices for runes. It's more use of content. You know, it's all around better because this is. You know, people actually making use of the different economies in the game is better for the economies of the game. It's not rocket science.
I love that the price of runes are going up because I make all my own as it is. So, you know, if I want to sit there and one day just start making money and just doing rune running,
water
I'm going to make money.
Out of it. Yeah. And the part about this that I want everybody to consider is that they're already working and implementing a death cost fix that we don't know what the full details are going to be. We have a bit of an idea behind that, but keep in mind that everything that has been done with the economy of this update is going to be taking into account the findings of that death cost rework in terms of what the economic ramifications are going to be, both from the Slayer side to now the runecrafting skilling side.
I like that there is a cost for death. I always use a ring of death if I'm going anywhere where I may die, because, you know, it's 15% of an onyx, which at the moment, only about 150K. A mil.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a 150K death. Yeah, big deal. I thought the simplest way they could have done is just gone, as we said a little while ago, was just each tier is a certain price. So you're not. It doesn't matter whether it's an augmented or plain, and it doesn't matter whether it's melee range or magic. You know, your tier 95s cost this much, your tier 92s cost this much, you know, your tier 90s, and just have that scale that way so you know exactly. And there's not going to be, you know, I die with magic gear and it's going to cost me 45 mil. Right. He dies with range gear and it's going to cost him, you know, 3 mil.
What about what about death with skilling?
Death with skilling?
Like in the wilderness now, because you obviously have the divination, you have agility, and we have the abyss, but there's safe cracking as well, which could be interesting with the demonic skull or not, now that there's that PvP requirement taken away on that, the wilderness safes.
Yep.
I'd be interested to see what kind of thieving XP someone could pull on double XP coming up here very soon.
I might go do an hour of it, just without double XP. I'll do an hour up there just to test it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And it raises the question, what other skilling methods could you add to the wilderness? Because I go back to what Sirion said, Anachronia. Anachronia launches as a blank canvas. It has the agility course. It has Big Game Hunter and other hunter hotspots, later added archaeology and such. What's the next skilling method that could be added to the wilderness?
Well, you've already got one farm patch out there, but maybe
the one farming patch.
Yeah. You could do something else with, you know, something else with farming out there. I mean, crafting, unfortunately, there's no real use for.
I think it's going to be largely
craft something decent.
It's going to be largely limited gathering skills, I think.
Yeah,
that would be.
That's really
all
you can do.
That's interesting that you mentioned that
gathering.
because I was thinking, you know, as we work our way through this storyline, this is obviously Zamorakian based. What if we had a Zamorakian themed mini archaeology site, like the Sentistan site?
Ooh, I'd love that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, but like at the same time, would you really want to do archaeology in a location where you get attacked?
Where you get blacked. Now and then? Yeah.
You know, it feels like it wouldn't fit very well with the skill. That's the thing with agility, right? Like, I did some agility in
the this story.
And I went round and round and round, and I was like at threat level 2 or 3, and I got attacked by a revenant dragon, I think. Big deal. It hit me for like 700. I'm like, okay, that's not fun if that's going to happen a lot. So I went, climbed up the wall, climbed to the pipe, you know, go all the way around. And by the time I had made a full circle and it could attack me again, it despawned. Oh. Like, okay. Cool. Big deal. So that's, you know, doing agility is going to be just fine, right? Like, you bring some food, that'd be just fine.
That's interesting that it disappears. So,
yeah. Like, the ambushes despawn automatically after like 45 seconds.
Oh, I did not know that.
And then your talent scout encounter.
Yes, exactly. Then I went into the pit, and I was like, okay, well, let's go. And it came back, and my threat level was 0. I was like, well, no ambushes for me then the next few time. Also, of course, because you're not really getting XP every tick, the threat level doesn't really go up very fast. Yeah. So, you know, I think the Wilderness Agility Arena really became a really good place to go. To train.
But you're going
to
want the demonic skull on it in order to make it competitive with other agility methods, unless you're right in that 50-ish band.
Yeah, no, especially, yeah.
So
absolutely.
Just usual caveat with that.
Maybe we get some ironwood trees out there.
What?
The next level tree.
What?
And do some wood cutting out there.
Wait, are you saying is that something you want, or?
No, I'm saying just imagine if they did a new tree and
you scared me. I thought maybe I missed part of a woodcutting update.
No, it's just.
Oh no! Didn't you hear about the woodcutting and fletching update?
Have you heard about the woodcutting and fletching update?
But
they've done a lot with fletching with the new arrows and that, but they've just really done not much with woodcutting.
Yeah. And I just want to, before we move on from the skilling side of this, we mentioned gathering skills. Of course, you got your bloodwood trees out there, which you can bring your full setup to now.
Yes! How good is that?
When it comes to mining, unfortunately, the highest ore we have right now in the wild is Bane, which, I mean, okay. I don't feel as though we need that much Bane, or it would be interesting if we had an extra Animica source or some other...
Put light and dark Animica out there, and if you have your demonic skull, you can receive double ore or something like that. You know, make it so there is a risk versus reward for, you know, if you do want to use that demonic skull. But for those like myself who just want to go out there and... And you can along some weapons to fight if you want to. And
You also got Butterfly Hunter, Black Butterfly Hunter, too. Don't forget about that.
I'm going to disagree with the mining spots there. Like,
okay.
Sure, Bane is... We have access to Bane, right? Because we all finished the quests. But, you know, the biggest Bane spot is really the Glacier Cave. Right?
Yeah, Glacier Caves, yep.
There's one other spot, I think.
Right, which Bane is locked behind Ritual of the Majorat.
Exactly. So I think it's actually a great addition, right? Like, I think it's actually good.
Okay.
And I think Animica, I mean, I hate that there's Animica in the desert, I think, freely available. I wish that was like an ore that's really hidden behind a bunch of quests and make it interesting that way.
Yeah, let's deplete it out of the desert and move it to the wilderness.
Yeah, like, I think... I like almost all the Animica spot except for the ones in the desert because, you know, they're all sort of.
There's Animica in the desert?
Yeah, I think there's dark Animica.
Right up. I thought it was the light one, right up just north of Uza.
No, that's Necro.
Check.
Is it? Okay.
There's light, Anachronia, later, and Tumekan's Remnant. 8 rocks. south on the other side of the center bit from the monkeys, east of the lodestone.
Oh,
bandit camp lodestone.
Interesting. I found
next
it.
Next to Polly.
All right.
Whereas the dark Animica rocks are only Anachronia and the empty throne room. And even the Anachronia spots, I kind of wish they hadn't put the light there,
yeah.
But only the dark,
yeah.
Because
yeah, fair.
That would have made that very interesting. But yeah, no.
Yeah, so overall, I mean, Wilderness Skilling should be back to something that people truly consider doing for some of the best XP. I think when it comes to thieving, when it comes to Hunter, and of course when it comes to runecrafting, if you choose to skull yourself. So,
and maybe that's, you know, this is just the beginning. Maybe they will start adding some more of that stuff there, and I hope they do. I hope they, like with Anachronia, where they did go back and add things sort of later on, I hope they remember to go back,
right,
and, you know, update this and just, you know, keep their eye on it. Don't, you know, it's not some, okay, throw it in there and now let's forget about it.
But it's important, to remember what Sirion said. You don't want to necessarily put a skill like archaeology in the wilderness where you're going to get killed by something right away.
I mean, honestly, what I kind of hope where the wilderness is going to go is that, for me, they could have upped the danger a bit more. They could have made it an even more dangerous place, right? Like, I think it should even be dangerous if you run across it, and right now you can run 5 laps around it and be fine, right? As long as you don't get too close to certain spots.
Certain dragons, et cetera, yeah.
They could have made it even more dangerous. But what I kind of hope is at some point there's this sort of bulwark in the center of it where there's like a little town. It's not part of the wilderness officially. But maybe to keep that up, you need to go there every week and drop some resources and repair the defenses, right?
That's what I was expecting as a wilderness update.
And make it like a little bulwark of civilization, make it a base of operations. And then in there you can have like an archaeology site, and in there you can have a bank and all that stuff. But, you know, maybe make it even hard to get there. Don't put a lodestone there.
No.
Right? Make a teleport item that you can unlock, but don't make it easy to unlock. Put it behind a Grandmaster quest or something like that. Then we're talking, right? That's kind of where I want this wilderness to go. And that's why I say, make the whole thing more dangerous. Make it so that you always, when you go to this bulwark of civilization, you come in limping because you're almost dead, right? That's the kind of danger I'm looking for in the wilderness.
Hmm. Yeah, my initial thought when they were talking about this is that we're going to start reclaiming it, and we'd have a little town that we start building up and build up farming,
kind of restore it, maybe.
Yeah, exactly, that type of thing, like similar to the restoration of the Anachronia base camp, but more involved, where, you know, you had to collect things and there were things out in the wilderness, you know, you had to build up your walls and things to protect them from the monsters and such. That's what I was sort of hoping for. And then, you know, we'd build our own little skilling areas in there, much like we did with the sort of...
A bit like Shades of Morton.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I can't believe you said that.
But a bit like that, but, you know, sort of, you know, a bit more advanced. And then we'd have something, you know, where it then becomes like Miscellanea 2.0, where you've got to upkeep it and... Yeah, you've got to go out there and collect things in the wilderness to upkeep it, you know?
Like a mix between Anachronia Base Camp, Miscellanea, and Shades of Morton.
Exactly.
In the middle of the wilderness.
Yep.
And you have something that excites me enough to log in for weekly and go and do.
Exactly. Boom. And then that's it. Something you do each week. I mean, you don't have to do it every day. And like Miscellanea, I mean, you know, maybe there's something you can do, unlock, where, you know, you may only have to do it, you know, every 2 weeks rather than once a week. But, you know, I do think something that you do weekly, take away from that daily scape, you know, something where once a week you go down there, you do this, and if you forget in a week, you've got, you know, you do it on a Wednesday, you've got till, you know, the next Wednesday it resets, and if you haven't done it by the end of that week, then all your people die and you've got to start again.
Or do it a bit like the clan citadel, right? Where like if you forget it a week, like your whole thing goes sort of in a degraded state, and
exactly, yeah,
you got to restart back up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, see, something like that would be so interesting and so much fun and engaging. The problem with a lot of the content that comes out, it's just not engaging. So much stuff now is coming out that's sort of more AFK, and that's why I sort of love the Wilderness update as it is with the Slayer side, where you have to engage, you have to watch. I can't sit there, click on the creatures, let them attack me, go and make a coffee, come back, pick up whatever's dropped on the, you know,
right.
whatever they've dropped, and, you know, have TV going. I've got to watch, because if those ambushes come, I'm dead.
Yeah. And I think what we have just underscored here is that wilderness skilling can definitely be back. And it's just a way, the only thing that seems to be missing from the skilling side of it right now is a way of encouraging people to engage with it, like you were saying, weekly or every other week, and adding some kind of changing element to it, I guess would be the term.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, and I've had this.
It's also.
Go ahead.
You know what would also have been interesting is if they had done some. Like, remember how we had the. Was it the Oasis of Head? It was like an update recently where we said this is basically a mini. World event, and it completely blanked me out what it
that
was.
Would have been the Head Oasis.
Yeah, the Head Oasis Restoration.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was something else as well that was even more.
The boat mini world to event. Anachronia.
No, more recent than that. Oh, God, what is it? I don't know.
Actually, imagine rebuilding the, for construction XP, you've got to rebuild the wilderness agility course yourself once a week, and then you can use it.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, just little things like that. I mean, it doesn't take a lot, you know, once a week, or even if it's a monthly thing, okay, you build it each month.
And then you can pick your obstacles so it's level appropriate, and now you have a player-owned agility course.
Yep.
Amazing.
This is like
guys.
Mind-blowing content here.
Yeah.
Where
that gives you a construction update in the world.
And this is why why you said at the beginning you're allegedly not a JMod.
Contrary to popular belief, yeah.
That's it. I mean, you do something like that. You build it up. You know, it's a monthly, weekly or monthly thing. You just build it, put your own different things in there, and, yeah, the creature's going to attack you. But they chase you, you know. That little hole that's down at the end of one end, you can drop down there to escape the monster. You've got to sit down there for 30 seconds so it loses interest, and you can come out and keep going. Or you can take weapons and kill it. There's so much that they could do. That gives you a construction update. It gives you, your agility. And as you said,
but
if you
build it,
the
point is, you guys, this
levels,
could be done without the wilderness.
It could be, but doing it in the wilderness gives purpose to the wilderness.
Not just purpose, right? Fluff.
Yes.
That's the thing that the wilderness lacks right now for me. It lacks fluff. It lacks a story. It lacks a background. It lacks context, right? Whenever you're in Anachronia, you know, there's this whole story about around it, why you're there, how it has been brought back from history.
Right.
Why and you're there, and it's like there's all this anima stuff and the dragonkin that are sleeping there. There is like so much.
Right, but we do get some of that in Daughter of Chaos in terms of the backstory of what's been happening in the fighting there. But not to
it's
the level
an
that you're discussing.
Battleground, not, but you go there and it's one big open wasteland that is, you know, and we'll get to that in a moment, but, you know, the area is not inviting in any way. In any way, right? Like, sure, it's meant to be a desolate wasteland, but gameplay-wise, it's not inviting either. It's just, it just lacks, Exactly. When I go there, my imagination isn't going wild with all the cool stuff that happened there in history. Like, the one place that does that well right now is the wilderness sort in the center, where there's literally skeletons sitting there with their hands in front of their face. Yeah. Like, that is the kind of stuff that I'm there for. But that's the exception rather than the rule. And content-wise, you can tell a story there that, you know, like I said, Morton does better, right? The entirety of anything east of that river is meant to be uninviting and one big swamp, but the gameplay mechanics resonate with that. Whereas in the wilderness, they plop down a few monsters, they plop down a few scaling nodes. That's it.
Right.
And they graphically reworked it, and that's it.
Yeah, and we're going to go to PvP and the graphical rework in just a minute, but I want to make a point on this in terms of what you were just discussing on here, is that maybe they did this because people said they want more traditional updates in the sense that this is the kind of update you would have had before, where you just graphical rework it, add some monsters, make it a little bit more clean around the edges.
I don't think that's that. I mean, to me, that's a really cheap excuse.
Yeah.
Because the content I just described, right, anything in Mauritania is old. Right? And they're in the same situation. Like, there's so much content around it. Like, Miscellanea is old. And it has, like, a little thing that you can do there. Like, all the old areas have little pieces of content that may not have held up to the test of time. But there's something going on there. Always.
So the question I think that comes next is, will this wilderness update stand the test of time?
By itself as it is now, it will basically just become a Slayer area and not much else.
So it needs that
if
extra little...
If they keep updating, yeah, if they keep updating and adding extra things...
Yeah.
Then, yes, I think it will. I think this could be our new Anachronia if they do it right and sort of keep, you know, it doesn't have to be every week or every month we get it, but, you know, every 3 to 6 months they add something extra there that brings you back and such.
Right. So in addition, keep curating the content and whatnot.
Yep.
And, you know, this is one. Go ahead.
What I find interesting is you say it can be the new Anachronia, and I agree with that sentiment. At the same time, let's just be clear that the nice thing here is that it is complementary to Anachronia.
Yes.
Because it's different, right? Like, this is a risk-reward area.
Yeah.
It's not that it's going to take over the role from Anachronia because it does everything better. No. It takes a very different approach to scaling.
Exactly.
And
right.
That
because
is something...
That stands alongside rather than overtaking.
Right. Consider the juxtaposition of going into the wilderness and risking death versus giving Zygomites haircuts and dealing with bathroom puns.
Yes. Exactly.
Exactly.
No,
yep.
But that's really it, right? Like, and each their own, and hopefully both of them are inviting enough to the right number of people that you get a rough equal split.
And with that, I think you just ask the listeners, which do they prefer? Are they on board with something like the wilderness, or do they prefer a more curated approach like we're talking about, that it could become a different kind of Anachronia, complementary?
Leave your opinions in the comments down below. Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it. I mean, you are going to have people who are going to prefer one over the other and concentrate, you know, 99% of their time in one area, but then you're going to have people like myself who want to mix it up. Yeah, this week I just feel like kicking back and relaxing. I'm just going to go and do the Anachronia stuff. I want to get involved in the game this week, so I'm going to go out to the wilderness where I'm watching the game and getting involved and having to do different things and watch my ambushes and watch my threat levels and that type of thing. So I'm actively engaged in the game rather than just AFKing and coming back and making sure I'm back every 4.5 minutes to click on the screen.
And you just underscored why I think this update will work going forward, despite it just feeling like that. But at the same time, it has so much room for potential. So
yeah, it's got a lot of potential, and that's why I said I hope they don't. It's not sort of okay, it's there,
one
it's done.
Yeah.
Now we forget about it now.
All right. PvP, I mean, people are going to say PvP is dead now, but we need to be 100% honest here that PvP was PvP was dead before EOC came out.
I have the feeling that, you know, the only PvP that I think at some point I explained it this way, that I think there's two kinds of PvP. There's the kind of PvP where both parties are agreeing to PvP, and there's the kind of PvP where one of the parties is agreeing to PvP.
One's a murderer party, and the other one's...
The first party is... The first one is go duo, go to Castle Wars. That wasn't touched, right? They're still go into Clan Wars with in the portal where... Whatever. The other one is basically grieving because someone doesn't want to take part in PvP and the other person does. And you're just there skull tricking them. You're just there giving them an annoying time for your own benefit because maybe they have some money. And this is one of these cases where, like, cool, you just killed a noob for 1 million. Are you proud now, right? Are you proud of yourself? That's but the kind of that they killed.
It's not PvP, though. I mean, it's like the other day I was out there. I go out there to the farming patch. I bank everything. I take out a wilderness sword, a bucket of manure, and the seed. Yes. And I get killed. Okay, great. You know, you killed me. You got nothing. Because when I respawn, I've still got it all. Because I keep three items. All you're doing is pissing me off. And, you know, making my game unenjoyable. And, you know, that's why I like this opt-in PvP, because if I want to get involved in that, I'll flick it on. Yeah. I will never, ever flick it on. But you know, there are people who do want to.
It feels to me a bit like that. Well done. You just stole candy from a child.
Yeah,
are you happy
now?
You punched the baby
in the nose and took its dummy.
Right. And when we talk about PvP... EOC always made it difficult to PvP in the wilderness. We need to be 100% honest with that. And before that, you had the
It wasn't even fun. Yeah.
No. And before that, you had the free trade and actual PvP removal, and that was added back in 2011. So you had about a year worth of wilderness non-EOC PvP, and then you go back to 2007 before that. And then it really in that original RS2 era, 4, 5, 6, 7, 2004, 5, 6, 7, that you had actual PvP as you know it in the wilderness. And I just died in the wilderness.
And that's another thing that I think we need to be clear at, right? Like, even if you went into the wilderness or trying to defend yourself with some armor and some stuff, you know, the way EOC works is somebody surges in, teleblocks you, stuns you, does everything, and you're dead.
Yep.
Yeah. Right? Like, you don't even have time to respond because everything in EOC is fast. With the amount of damage you can pump out, you can stack up so much damage that you can basically insta-kill someone.
And you can't even eat quick. Like, you know, your eating is every 0.6 seconds. I mean, you used to be able to just hold down the button to spam eat. You can't even do that.
No, exactly. So it's one of these situations that, like, if it was maybe a bit more feasible to defend yourself, that, you know, whenever you do get attacked, you know, you have a second to respond and you can actually, you know, go and fight back, that would be a different story. But PvP just, or like EOC just doesn't lend itself for that anymore. And, you know, at that point, we should just say, you know, it's dead.
And it has been for quite some time.
PvP truly has been dead for over 10 years. It's been dead since EOC, really.
And, I mean, I'm sure there is probably a handful of people out there who do PvP in the typical sense of PvP in the wilderness and such, but we need to be 100% honest. This has not been a core gameplay style in RS3. Ever.
And look, there's things like Deathmatch and Castle Wars and Clan Wars and duels everywhere. You don't even have to go to the duel arena anymore.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, you can just duel anywhere.
There's so many, like, drop-in replacements for going into the wilderness. Like, I don't get it. Why that really needs to still exist. And look, if you want to go and beat up your friends and play some kind of, you know, special game mode that requires that, there's an opt-in. It's simple as that. Yeah. The only people that get robbed of their playstyle is the people that punch babies in the nose. And honestly, that's not the kind of people I will ever feel sorry for.
Nope, not at all.
And if
the
you look at the
better without them.
And if you look at the wilderness death list, I'm currently on world 66 right now. There's only 7 of them on here. I don't know if this resets daily or how often this resets, but there's only 7 of them on this list right now. So, and you know, you guys are entirely right that before the people who were always being killed were the ones doing the farm runs and such. And yeah. as a result of that, it was extremely off-putting. Also, you know, luring was a problem, but we just need to be 100% open with people that you can still get lured. Just don't go talk to Vaya and click that Vala and click that toggle the PvP option and follow someone into the wilderness. So that's just something that needs to be said. And what I'm wondering about go ahead.
If you click on that and turn your skull on and go out there and get lured, now it is all on you. You know, you can't blame the lure anymore because, you know, you've opted in to go to a PvP because everyone's opted out automatically. You have to opt into it. So if you go out there, opt in, and then, you know, get blasted for all your wealth, well, sorry, you know, you've made that mistake.
What I'm wondering about this is that we always have had the idea behind it that the 2007 removal of the wilderness and free trade was something, was one of the community bifurcation moments, the second being when EOC came out and such. Do you think that there's somebody inside Jagex who's been there a long time and was there in 2007 and is potentially saying this, what we did this week, is how we should have done the removal of PvP back in 2007? Or would such an update back then still have gone off as horrible as it did?
Yeah, I think it would have. And I think what we have today, it just doesn't compare to...
Right,
to
because we had a PvP community back then. We don't now.
We had a PvP community. It was a different ecosystem. It was a different combat system, you know, skilling. It's just... You can't compare it.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Okay. And, I mean, we're going to move past this relatively quickly here, because I don't really think there's much else to say except the fact that it was already dead heading into this. This just made it so that only people who want to do PvP are going to be subjected to it, which is a wonderful, dare I say it, quality of life update for all involved, because people who are just going into the wilderness to skill aren't going to be inconvenienced by people who can pump out huge amounts of DPM and kill you oh so quick, because we all know that if somebody is doing a full PVM rotation, you can expect somewhere up to the realm of 200,000 plus DPM at the mid-range, higher at obviously top best-in-slot equipments. So even if you're doing a quarter of that, you still have the potential to kill somebody within seconds with that. So it's a quality of life update for everybody because it protects those people, and it also makes it so that people who are in the wilderness and want a PvP are going to be evenly matched.
And now I can sell all my Royal Dragonhide that I've got, armor that I've got taking up space in my bank.
For what?
Well, if I did go out there, I only took out Royal Dragonhide and the crystal bow.
Oh, okay.
So if I did happen to get killed while I was having to hunt something out there.
Yeah, and it is worth noting that if you find the hex bow and you pick up the hex bow, that is another sculling event, just like divination is. Obviously. So just wanted to highlight that. We should talk a bit about the graphical rework, because that happened as well with this, and for people watching the YouTube version, you might have seen some of that on display earlier in the podcast. How do we feel about the general graphical changes that were made to the wild today, this week?
Overall, I love it. I think it looks really good.
All right. Sirion?
I have nothing to complain about the looks. I mean, Jagex has really narrowed down on a style. For the longest time, it was very inconsistent, and the game still looks very inconsistent. I really hope they are going to bring this style to, you know, anything, any place in the kingdom of Kandarin, please, because that is old shit. Adoin Rework.
Karamja first.
There's even a part of the wilderness in level 11 wilderness north of the Dark Knights where it's actually raining.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. The only criticism that I have on the graphical rework is that it all still feels a little bit samey. To the extent that when I was going around, I kept having to look at the world map. And maybe that gets better if you go there more often, but it feels empty. And not necessarily just empty, it feels devoid of landmarks. Right? Because there's so much space between places, it's really hard to...
Yeah.
And I have the same problem with Anachronia in an extent where it's very mazy, but
I'm
going to
agree with you on
like,
the bottom or on the top half of the wilderness, because you got the you know, the big castles and whatnot on the bottom half. So
yeah, exactly. You go there and you're like, okay, let me look for some landmarks around me, and you see, you know, there's no elevation. There's maybe a few lava lakes, but those are everywhere, and that really, it's a shame. I feel. You know, it's an ancient battlefield, right? It used to be the center of civilization, even. Why isn't that visible? And I think
more
that's
ruins.
Something they could have done. I also think, and moving away from the from the graphical stuff into the practical side of things, some of the things just don't make sense anymore. I tried getting into the bandit camp to get access to there's a shop there, right? I can't because they're all aggressive, so I don't know how I ever get to.
You need to be Skulled.
You need to be Skulled. Okay. Well,
If you're Skulled, they are not aggressive to you.
Yeah, just go to Mr. X. He still skulls you to go in and buy this stuff because I buy my seeds in there every couple of days.
That's interesting. So I don't know if the same applies to the other monsters in the wilderness, whether they are not aggressive if you're Skulled, because I saw one of those cape sellers slash bank persons just walking in the middle of a group of dragons.
Yeah, pretty much everything is aggressive in the wilderness except those that merchant and all those bandits and whatnot. Those are designed to go on aggressive if you're Skulled.
Well, there you go. So it's really silly because, you know, a lot of the update feels like we'll just plunk a few monsters down like pretty randomly and uniformly, and that's about it, which leads to some awkward situations where, like I said, the bank walks in the middle of dragons that keep attacking you, so you can't even get to the dialogue options. Walking through the gate into the deep wilderness in the northwest in the icy area makes you enter the actual ice area of the living wyverns. So I'm like, if you had just shifted this two or three tiles, you know, you don't have to walk through that area as a skiller.
And then
to
on
go
the other
to...
side, you got Hydrix dragons.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, there's a few practicalities, and I understand it's a massive, massive area, but...
And it's meant to be dangerous.
It's meant to be dangerous, but at the same time, let's be honest, it also needs to be a practical area if we want to make it popular with skillers again. So, you know, I feel... Because it is so big, there was a lack of attention to detail. And that shows. I feel... Somebody sort of roughly had a brush and was like, this is going to be the Wyvern area, and didn't really, you know, heed the gate that was sitting there. So I'm hoping that we'll see some patch notes over the next few weeks where people start tweaking the
a few more
areas. or that, I mean, I would welcome that as well. But overall, I feel... On a graphical perspective, it's fine, but I think in the more practical aspect, the update lacks polish.
All right, that's fair. Another interesting thing about this is that this is another area along with the Centistan Asylum that uses point light shadowing. And for what that means is that typically shadows in-game have been cast by fixed light sources, but now light from ambient sources like torches and such can actually cast shadows on your character. and you know just walk up against any torch in the wilderness, and you'll see how this works. So that's a nice level of ambience that we first saw in the Sentistan Asylum. It should be on most systems that can support fairly standard graphics, because interestingly enough, the iMac that I run most of my RS stuff on is actually able to do this. So I had no idea that I supported point-lit shadows, but there we are. So, anything else on the graphical side of this? So I feel like overall it's just your typical RS3 modern graphical rework. And we say typical, but every graphical environment that's come out through the Elder God Wars, Sentistan, up to now, I feel like they've hit out of the park in terms of quality. And then there's just there's a few little practical sides that need to be scratched that Sierra.
The quality of it, I think, it looks great in the quality side. And I think Sirion sort of pointed out some things that I didn't really sort of pay that much attention to, but sort of when you think about it, I go, some landmarks and that would have been nice. I just want them to start doing that type of graphic update throughout the game. I know they say it's expensive and it's big,
it's
and it
doesn't
be paired
with some kind of content and such.
Yeah. But it's, you got a 20-year-old game. I want it to look the same throughout. I don't want to, I don't want Anachronia 2005. Karamja 2005 on an island and go to the Anachronia Island and go, wow,
right?
It's like two different
games.
Well,
you
could
do that
really
with Karamja
is.
Right now. There's still, you could do that with Karamja right now. I'm not going to say what one of the elements is, because I want that element to stay there as long as possible. But you can do that with Karamja right now to other areas in the game. But overall, I think this accomplishes what it needed to for the graphical rework and wonderful point light shadowing. Okay, so as far as RS updates go, what did you guys see or hear about how this landed in terms of quality, the software quality side? Because I feel like this is a good point to end with what we've had recently and how most game updates these days arrive and they don't break. It's been a long time since we've had something like that on the RS3 side, and to the point where they even took longer with the update this week and actually took a full backup of the game, should anything bad have happened.
Which made a lot of sense, because, especially when you're updating something like the Wilderness, where there is, so much that could go wrong. I think when you do a major update like that, you should always be doing backups. And I think they learnt from previous experience. So I think it went off pretty smoothly. They gave us all a warning at the start to say, hey, don't do anything where, something valuable that you gain may be lost, because we may have to do a rollback. They did give everyone the warning on that, so I think they did that well. I would have liked to have seen a big, when you first logged in, to have that come up, hey, be careful, go look at our website for full details, where they told you that, because not a lot of people will always go and read what happens.
Yeah, we have experienced a great quest on launch day.
Yeah, we've got a great clan where, people were jumping on and saying, hey, if you hadn't read it, just be aware and just warning people. But overall, I think they did really well.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a couple of things regarding money drops. If you were getting money and you had north of, relatively close to the 2.1 bill cap, those coins would have just disappeared. So that was something that was hot fixed in due time. So that was good. And there were lots of allegations that there were ways to scull people without their knowledge. But Mod Steve put out a wonderful post on the subreddit that actually went into that and said that, despite what we have heard, despite what we have seen in terms of reports and reproducibility, skull tricks and being able to actually skull people through various methods that have been talked about don't really seem to be panning out. So there was some good dev communication on that this week as well.
Are you saying the internet lied?
However, again, I think they did all that communication for that type of thing on the Reddit where I don't go to. I only look at sort of their news postings and such. So I didn't see any warning about that.
Yeah. And
yeah. No, overall, I think, yeah, they did a good job in communicating this. And there was so much toxicity around that Reddit post. So someone was like, hey, I just died because I got skull checked and I lost all my stuff. And everybody was like, oh, of course it is. We could have known that this was going to happen. And the other half of the comments was like, let's take this bug abuser and permaban hit. If Jarrix does any less than permabanning this skull tricker and bug abuser, then they've become soft. I'm like, what is this place? It was such a weird thing to see. So I have all the respect for the mods that do go out there and try to communicate in a reasonable way.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of an update hitting the way it's supposed to, I think this went off relatively well. And it really raises a question. It's been so long since we've seen anything major, knock on wood. Is this a new standard for Jagex?
I think, you know, there will be a lot of people that always complain about, oh, you know, maintenance windows, servers offline for longer, and all that stuff. But I think it's something we need to get used to because...
Yeah. I mean, you compare it to other MMOs, there is no contest for how quick Jagex does their updates. Yeah. You look at games like Star Trek Online or Elder Scrolls Online, STO is down for 3 or 4 hours for an update. ESO is sometimes down for 8 or 12 hours for an update.
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen any sort of gaming where you've got live people playing that doesn't go down for a couple of hours. I play a lot of online poker, and when they do their updates, you know, they're out for 2 to 3 hours, and that's every 2 or 3 weeks. So I think the way they do it is really good, and I think I think it was last Wednesday where they shut the game down for 2 hours.
Did it again this week too.
Yep. I don't mind that because you know you're going to have a proper update and it's doing that. I mean, you know, they're doing the backups to make sure that all accounts are protected and saved. So if there is something that goes wrong, it's going to be easy to reinstall those accounts. And I think this is something that's come about from those the lockout that we had last year.
It's one of those things we never want that again.
No, exactly right. And so I think if I have to lose 2 hours of play once or twice a month, I'm happy for that to protect those. I was lucky that it never happened to me, but there were a lot of players that couldn't play for a whole month. So if they're doing all the backups and doing all that properly, it just shows that they're growing as well and becoming sort of a more professional unit.
And, we can also... And go ahead.
The thing I really liked about this particular update is how transparent they are about it, right? That, they were saying, it's going to be longer because we're doing this in case that, They do a good job at communicating it. I think they could have done a better job at communicating the maintenance window but on Wednesdays. But other than that, that's just as important as actually doing the work. Just being open about it. And
honestly, they told us right up front, bang, and it's like, okay, great, you've explained why it's going to be down that long, no issues at all.
I think it shows in the community. Like, there's a few people who whine about it, but there's always going to be people whining about this kind of stuff, but the larger part of the community takes this really well, I think. So
You're always going to have those perpetually outraged people who, want to have something to complain about. They're not happy unless they're complaining. You're never going to avoid, that group. But as a whole, I think it was accepted pretty well.
And we can go back to when this first started. You remember when we first heard there was the new executive producer, one of the things that he wanted to focus on was growing up the technology back end of RuneScape, and this falls directly into that wheelhouse. So this is something that you brought up, Sirion. Is this a hallmark of the new executive producer putting this stamp on the updates, and that we're going to ship these updates, we're going to ship them in a safe and responsible manner so that we're going to be absolutely sure that our systems are working fine and that everything before the update is fine and everything after the update is fine. Take that extra step to ensure that.
Yeah, again, not a mod, but if I were and I was to become executive producer, this is exactly what I would be doing, right? I would be like, tell me, how long do you need to make sure that, you know, everything goes well? And if I give you 1 hour more, what can you do with that time? And all that stuff, I think, is happening here. And as long as they keep communicating about it and they don't overdo it, I think, you know, that's a really good sign for Jagex as a company. And that's the kind of experience that's going to translate to any other product they might make and ship.
Right. And that's also a hallmark of what you would do in any other software enterprise of when you're going to ship an update. You're going to make sure that you're able to take it down safely and put it back up and not destroy any data through the process, because there's the big tech companies out there do this probably each and every day, carry this sort of thing out. And being able to actually see this now happening with RuneScape, which for the longest time was felt like a very rudimentary development cycle, as we've heard before, to the point where they didn't even have code branching, where people were all working on the same branch of code. This is a huge, huge, significant departure for what Jagex is able to do in terms of shipping updates going forward. And my only worry about this is that the rank and file RS players don't see this and don't understand why it's happening. And it might be interesting to talk to, again, some of the people on the technical side through either a live stream or some sort of Q&A that they could do and explain why this is happening. Because we kind of talked to some of those people when the login lockout stuff happened, but it might be interesting to see what they have to say nowadays with these maintenance cycles and where things stand. So.
Oh, yeah, I'd absolutely love to see some more interview with one of the DevOps persons behind the screens and sort of talking about, you know, how do they work on a product that's so old, and make sure that that's up to snuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, hey, that's always something interesting that hopefully will happen in a live stream going forward. But at this point, I think we can cap off the wilderness reborn portion of the update and say that it dropped and landed as it was expected to. I think it's going to have an impact going forward. It almost had new skill vibes for a bit, but it didn't necessarily reach that point. But I think they've got a good framework here to do wonderful things with the wilderness and other kind of reworks like this going forward, because this is quintessentially a rework update, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anything else before we wrap up from either of you?
No, just say job well done on it.
Alrighty. Sirion, I believe you have a pick of the week for us.
It's yes. Oh, how am I going to explain this? Have you ever wanted to get that experience? Do you have like games where you're like, I wish I could experience playing that game for the first time again?
Sure.
I mean, I definitely have that. I'm deep into Zelda games. I've probably mentioned at least a few here on the show before.
And various live streams.
And various live streams. Yes, exactly. And that's what I'm going to talk about. I do weekly live streams. And a while ago, we did a long segment on randomizers. Randomizers are what I started with streaming in the first place. And what randomizers are, and they exist for a lot of games, is basically they take games. Zelda games lend themselves particularly well. But I know randomizers exist for the Metroid games as well. Ori has them. The Ori games. I think Hollow Knight has a randomizer. A lot of games that have like items that you get in sequence have randomizers. And basically what they do is they take all the items in the game and shuffle them.
Oh.
That's, That's all a randomizer does, right? And all of a sudden, you get these interesting situations where you're playing the game completely out of order, right? Because you're getting the items out of order, which means that different paths unlock in different ways. And sometimes you have to be a bit creative. You have to use non-intended ways to get to places, have to do non-intended strategies, and, you know, have to beat a game without getting a sword in the first place, right? Silly things like that. It's pretty challenging. It's pretty unique because every game is different. And I wanted to highlight the existence of randomizers because when I introduced one of my friends to it, who is a big fan of Ocarina of Time, Zelda Ocarina of Time, best game ever, according to them and all that. And, you know, you can play the game again and again and again and get really good at it. You can start speedrunning it. But it's the same game every single time. And then you shuffle all the items and the game is different every single time. And it's not quite the same as playing the game for the first time, but it's much more, I have this collection of items. What are the paths that are open for me? So you sort of get to test your game knowledge a lot. You get to get better with it as you do. And I think it's just such a fun way of experiencing games. So if you have a game that has like item progression or anything like that, I'd highly recommend you look it up, see if randomizers exist, and try it out. Like I said, most Zelda games have it. The Metroid games, Ori, Hollow Knight, those are the ones that are famous, but I have seen some really weird stuff out there. So I'd recommend you giving it a try. I do a seat every day. I have it set as my Saturday morning activity so that I have a reason to get out of bed and I enjoy it. No, it's true, right? Me and sleeping patterns, terrible, 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 but you know, Saturday morning, I get up, I make breakfast, I make coffee, and I play through an entire seed of A Link to the Past, which takes me about 2 hours. And it's really fun and challenging. And every time I come across new puzzles with new combinations of items that I need to figure out, it's so much fun. And I, ever since I tried that, I'm trying to look at what games that I have played as part of my childhood, can I play again with these new and different challenges?
And they're today? Guaranteed to work, right? Like the order it puts the items in?
Most of the well-developed ones, they will be smart enough that basically they shuffle it in such a way that the game can still be completed at all times. That being said, there is a subgenre that's called no logic randomizers, where they don't. you basically have to glitch your way through it, right? I mean, I've learned a whole bunch of glitches that I can do to speed up the game and all that stuff. And that's also, you know, the first time you pull off like a glitch, absolute love that feeling. So good. That's like the same feeling as killing a boss for the first time, right? Like killing a hard boss for the first time in a game that you've been struggling with. It's like that feeling of, you know, accomplishment. Pulling off a glitch for the first time has that same feeling of accomplishment. So it increases the longevity of games. And it has given me some renewed appreciation for retro games.
Because we always hear about retro games, but this is a different spin on it. And I can see this one being
exactly
appealing in an entirely different reason.
And like A Link to the Past is I think it 1991 or 1992, I think, so it's quite old already, and it shows its age. And you know, these randomizers often come with like small little patches to the game that are quality of life updates that make them less awful, because let's be honest, control schemes are pretty bad usually for these old games. But these games are also seriously hard, right? And games like that are rarely made anymore. I think you need to really look for games that are truly hard and challenging. And that, to me, is extra fun, right? Like, I've been on stream banging my head against Super Metroid. It's the first ever Metroid game I'm playing. I know. It took me long enough, but, you know, it's a really hard game. It's a really tough game, but you can't beat that feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah, the feeling of success and whatnot.
The feeling of success.
Yeah. And that's why we play games, I think. mostly.
That is why we play games. And I think these days, you know, a lot of those feelings of accomplishment are hidden behind grinds,
yeah.
right? Just yeah. time gates rather than skill gates.
Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
then we add, you know, real world money incentives to shorten those time gates. That's sadly the direction the industry has gone for good reason. So skill gates are good. And, you know, the level design of some of these older games, like the map design and the level design, if you think about the limited set of tools and knowledge they had back in the day, you know, Super Metroid, the level design in that, and Link to the Past as well, the dungeon design of that, I can name few games that ever match that. And that's, these games are, jeez, they're 30 years old right now.
And they're getting new life breathed into them with that.
And this genre has really given them new life and has really built... Oh, yeah.
It's one of the biggest categories on Twitch.
Yes, it is.
And I think that says all you need to know, aside from it being fun.
And the fact that people choose to repeatedly, right, hundreds, if not thousands of times, play the same game of 30 years ago, that says enough about how good those games are compared to the game that you pick up right now, play for 20 hours, maybe 30, and then you're done with it. This is, you know, I mean, I could turn this into a massive rant about the values of society these days and, you know, the throwaway values that we have. But, you know, back in the day, people built things that last, and apparently the games were no exception.
Makes sense. Makes sense. And with that, speaking of achievements and getting that sense from games, we do have our achievements of the week. So starting off, we have Skips, who got 99 Divination on August 3rd. Sparty Pants got 120 Defense on August 1st. And Exploited One got 99 Herblore on July 31st.
We had Mohua getting 120 Herblore on July 29. Battle/X getting 99 Crafting on July 29. And Sit Reigns getting 120 Farming on July 29.
And Shane's given me the fun name. We have Turd Sniffer O with 99 Rune Crafting on July 29. And WM Penguin, who got 120 Archaeology on July 28. Congratulations to all.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. What have you been up to on RS, Mr. Parnassius?
Myself, doing a lot of clue scrolls this week. I am closing in on 900 of each of the easy, medium, hard, and elite.
Oh, my God.
220 of master clues. So getting close to that 1,000 of the four main ones and as many of the masters as I can. Little bit of bossing. I'm trying to finish off some boss logs. Twin Furies at the moment. Just need the pet there.
You're totally going to do the Zuck boss log next, right?
I've been to Zuck twice and I keep dying, so I've got to sit down. People keep telling me there's safe spot, but the safe spot doesn't seem to work for me. I keep getting killed. So I've got to watch some videos. I think you sent me a video of it originally.
There's a good rundown of it in the episode we did on that too.
Yeah. So I've got to go back and watch that. But I just want to do those boss logs. I've got four more bosses to kill to sort of get that extra bonus back that they took off Comp Cape. Reaper Crew, I think it was called.
Yep, that's it.
Yep. But other than that, just mainly my clues and still doing some archaeology because Tetra Compasses are the best way to get master clues, and that's about it for me.
Okie dokie. How about you, Sirion?
Not much. I haven't really playing a whole lot of RuneScape lately, but I did check out the Wilderness and... I did some agility, if you can believe it. Not that I need the experience, but I was just going to give that a try. But yeah, honestly, not much. I'm very much being an observer rather than a participant to the ecosystem right now. The RuneScape
observing ecosystem. Many different facets of everything RuneScape, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. There's something behind that that we're not quite ready to talk about yet, but it's interesting nonetheless, everything we've been seeing and watching, eh?
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. As for me this week, I continue my adventure with raids whenever that's up off cooldown for loot. Aside from that, did a couple Reaper tasks this week, back on that. And aside from that, really just did the Wilderness Slayer grind to get the comp cape back. And now that Yak Tracks ended, it's kind of that back in limbo space for the next week or so until double XP comes. I think I'm possibly contemplating going for 120 woodcutting on double XPM, only about 5 mil away, so that should definitely be doable over that double XP time period. So that's starting next week. But aside from that, dailies and such and focusing on the updates. And I can also report that I have been dethroned. I no longer have the longest Zamorak kill time in all of RuneScape.
No! Somebody
has dethroned me and got a 41-minute and 6-second kill.
Oh my god.
Previously, my record was 27:44.
Well, that means you can start...
Yeah, I know. It means I could actually... Good times. It means I could actually start going to kill him the 25 times to unlock the skip and whatnot if I wanted to on that. Because that was the main reason I never went back solo, was because I wanted to guard this time slot. But maybe I'll...
I mean, you got the Reddit post out of it.
Yeah, and maybe at this point I'll just wait till I'm off the last page.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the accomplishment I set out to get, but it's there. It's still 5 minutes and 31 seconds slower than the third most recent, but this other person did a truly, truly... wonderful job of surviving for just over 13 minutes longer than I did. So, kudos to
them. And still killing the boss. That's, you know, the impressive part there.
Yep. So, I just wanted to highlight that, because that's been most of our running joke throughout July here on the podcast, was just checking in on this high score, and it's absolutely hilarious. I've had people message me about it. I've had numerous Reddit posts and whatnot. I've enjoyed it for all the different reasons. I think even the CMJ mod took a note of it, Modazana, as well. So, but that's all I've been up to, and I just wanted to report that. So, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update.
Well,
once
actually-
again. Okay.
We're just going to say there is one other thing. Shane must go and complete some achievements in farming this week as well. So we can report
right, we
learned
that.
Next week.
We learned that about the...
people jump on Patreon and you can hear all about that one.
Yeah, we learned that I, as a farmer, am missing some achievements. So, oops. About farming, but we won't say which ones. We'll leave that for the Patreon monthly bit. But
that's it.
If you guys want full episodes delivered automatically to you, subscribe to the podcast. Best way to get them, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Casts, and more, Stitcher, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where we post the video versions of the show and the nibbles each and every week, short little clips of the interesting segments. And please do give us a like and subscribe on YouTube. It greatly helps the channel out. And we'll be back next week to discuss Daughter of Chaos. So with that, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Bye-bye.
Happy scaping, all.